You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the FEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the FEA.
Hello and welcome to a special Chris Peterson edition of the Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Caracina.
And we have a new head coach of the Washington Huskies.
Could not be more excited. Well, I probably could be more excited. But Chris Peterson signing on with the Huskies this morning, it was great news. I went to sleep last night. This is actually kind of similar to your Coach Sarka leaving story. I went to sleep last night, and it was very late. And it seemed like a pretty big limbo for Chris Peterson. There were a lot of reports coming out of Idaho that he was not going to take the job. And then I woke up very early this morning at about 7 a.m. Chris Peterson was the head coach at UW.
Yeah, I got back to my hotel room. We're recording this via Skype because I'm down here in snowy Portland to watch the Blazers. But I got back to my
the I-5 edition of the Pelton Cast.
It is. I got back to my hotel room a little after 11, and the first thing I saw on Twitter was something saying that, you know, Peterson had turned down the job and that Nussmeier was going to be announced as the head coach this morning. And that turned out to be a fake tweet that someone retweeted. And by the time I scrolled back up through my timeline 5 minutes later, it was gone. So that was kind of weird, but, you know, definitely went to bed not knowing what was going to happen. I woke up like 5:30 in the morning and saw at that point that the first indication Joe Shad of ESPN had reported that Peterson was going to take the job. Although I went back to sleep at that point thinking that talks between Robinson Cano and the Mariners had broken off.
Yeah, that was also pretty exciting. When I woke up, the early report was Chris Peterson, yes, Robinson Cano, no. And then it both happened. So this has been a pretty amazing day in Seattle sports. Let's talk just really, really quick about Robinson Cano.
Okay.
And then we'll get on to Chris Peterson kind of in full detail. But, I mean, I don't really consider myself a Mariners fan, but it's going to be pretty cool to see a left-handed number 24 in the middle of the lineup.
I guess just being so casual as a baseball fan, like obviously I realize that Robinson Cano is a very good player, especially because teams are interested in paying him up in excess of $200 million over 10 years.
But, yeah.
Like is he going to be the kind of player that's like going to be exciting? Like that's the one thing about, like, you know, in basketball, if you sign the best free agent on the market, that's immediately going to be a really exciting player. Even in football, you know, it's not the same in terms of free agency, but it's someone that, you know, is going to be really exciting. But is Cano going to build that kind of excitement?
Absolutely. I'm surprised that you're even questioning that. I guess it makes me realize how little you pay attention to baseball.
I'm speaking for the extremely casual fan here.
Robinson Cano. And I mean, most of my baseball fandom is coming from fantasy baseball. He, through fantasy baseball, became, and I never owned him in fantasy baseball, became one of my favorite players in baseball. He is one of the most exciting hitters. I've heard him described as a hitting savant, basically. He hits for average. He hits for power. He kind of does everything. He's a great defender. Robinson Cano is the complete baseball player. He's not playing at the most important position defensively, but he's playing at a pretty important position defensively. He also just looks good as a hitter. You know, seeing Prince Fielder as a hitter, if you have to compare the two, Prince Fielder is kind of an awkward hitter. When he hits the ball, sometimes it goes really far, but he doesn't have the smoothest swing. He's not somebody who every time he comes to the plate, you're like, wow, what a hitter. But Robinson Cano, beautiful looking baseball player.
So is this
probably the most natural looking hitter in baseball right now.
So is this something that makes you want to go to Mariners games next year?
Yes. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to say plural. I didn't go to any Mariners games this year, and I could see myself – I will definitely go to a Mariners game next year.
All right. So they've sold one ticket based off the
– I'm going to qualify. Well, there are a lot of people like me. There are a lot of one tickets. When I say the most natural-looking hitter, I'm going to qualify that with an asterisk of Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah. I think the other thing, important thing we have to discuss here – I mean, I don't know that I think it's going to be a good signing ultimately for the Mariners, just because of the fact that I think to justify a 10-year contract like this, you have to get a lot of value out of the first couple of years, and I don't think the Mariners are good enough to do that.
Sure. I mean, honestly, it's not my money. Oh. I don't. Yeah, I mean, baseball teams spend big contracts and continue paying people long term. It's something that you can live through.
I was about to declare last night that we need a moratorium on the phrase "it's not my money" because it doesn't add anything to the conversation.
I only feel it in other sports. Like, let's say that a basketball team that I was cheering for made a bad signing, then it's still not my money, but I would be upset about it. right?
But everybody has a budget
In
in the sport
baseball,
where there's not a salary cap.
teams just get around it in baseball. There are a lot of bad contracts out there. Basically, every single contract in baseball is a bad contract.
Then
And
why are the Tigers trading away, Prince Fielder and eating a bunch of money in the process?
I mean, they still got a good player out of that deal. They still got one of the better second basemen in the league. And there was also another team who was interested in Prince Fielder.
Fair, but I just think every dollar you
I
spend
think
one
the
place is
most
all you can't
important
spend somewhere
thing about the
else.
Robinson Cano signing is, you ready for it? Ho!
Oh!
Right?
Can we talk about the conversation that Jay-Z, Robinson Cano, Howard Lincoln, and Chuck Armstrong had?
Would have loved to have been in there.
To be a fly on that wall. And I love the early reports today that Howard Lincoln exploded when Jay-Z demanded the 10th year.
He exploded. Can you imagine exploding? If, let's say that Jay-Z's backstory from his music is real, and you're old man Howard Lincoln, and you're yelling at Jay-Z.
His life may have briefly been in danger, but then they came up with the extra, it wasn't the full 25 million on the last year, but an extra 15 million, and now we're all good to go. And
Exploded. Howard Lincoln screaming in Jay-Z's face.
do we see a Jay-Z outdoor concert at Safeco Field next year?
Absolutely. That was my first thought. You gotta go, right?
Yeah.
Imagine next July, 2 years from now, July, Jay-Z playing at Safeco Field. This signing is worth it.
Yeah, I mean, from that standpoint, I completely endorse it. If
I would
anything more,
spend
Jay-Z,
any amount of the Mariners' money to get a Jay-Z concert at Safeco Field.
anything more from no signing?
Not really. I mean, I suppose we'll see what else the Mariners do. As far as we talked about this before, but any other players that I would be interested in, it said that they're still reportedly in talks with Carlos Beltran and Shin-Soo Choo, who are both, I think, pretty exciting players, and I wouldn't be upset if they signed either of them. But Matt Kemp is the other player who the Mariners would probably have to sell out a young pitching prospect to get him, and maybe eat some of his salary. But I think that if they got Matt Kemp, I'll go to multiple Mariners games next year. Kemp and Cano,
See, I feel like they're going
that's what
pitching.
I need.
I think David Price is the next play. I don't think it's going to be another hitter.
I think it'll be everybody. I'm
Yeah.
reportedly in talks with every single free agent, so that's pretty cool.
The thing about Shin-Soo Choo is he's the only one in this group that got traded for Ben Brossard by the Mariners. So
I can't believe you pulled that out, Ben Brossard.
that was Wikipedia. I looked that up.
Okay. I was like, wow. Barely having any understanding who Robinson Cano is, and then pulls Ben Brossard out of nowhere. Anyway, let's turn our attention to Chris Peterson. It's the real news at hand and the thing that we'll want to discuss the most and will impact our lives. As Husky season ticket holders, it is our money.
Yeah, I think we were very clear on the last podcast that if Chris Peterson was available and willing to listen, you have to go get him, and that's exactly what Scott Woodward did. It sounded like a pretty clean process, all things considered, that they were able to hammer out an agreement last night when they flew from Boise to Seattle to meet with him briefly.
It sounds like it didn't take too much convincing. I think a lot of folks, especially online and especially on the Boise side, treated the brief conversation that they had about 2 hours or so in Boise as a good sign for Chris Peterson staying. That basically they went and offered it to him, and Chris Peterson said no, and then they left. But really, it sounds like, for all intents and purposes, Chris Peterson had already accepted the job. And they went there to basically meet up and hammer out various details, but that even before Scott Woodward flew to Boise, it was almost a done deal.
Yeah, and it turns out, one of the things we were discussing yesterday is will there even be an interview with Chris Peterson? And it turned out there wasn't really a formal interview. It was just, hey, are you willing to come along? And then let's hammer out the details.
Yeah, that seemed like a strange thing. Chris Peterson would have to interview. I think everybody's pretty familiar with his background.
And if they wanted to read about his philosophy, he's talked about it at length. There was a great interview I linked to on CBSSports.com from this year's Media Day.
Really? Do you want to summarize that really quick?
Well, the important thing is that Chris Peterson, I did not know this until this morning, he has a pyramid of success.
Okay.
So now we have two versions of Pete's pyramid of success among Seattle football coaches, and I feel good about that.
I think Chris Peterson feels like the most Pete Carroll-like coach of any of the prospects involved. He's more Pete Carroll-like than Coach Sark, even though Coach Sark is part of the Pete Carroll lineage.
Without question. I think the one thing is he seems to be more of, he just wants to coach football. He doesn't care about any of the other stuff. So that's one of the things we talked about with potentially being an issue with Justin Wilcox, had he been the hire. That's, and also a reason that Chris Peterson hasn't taken some of these higher profile jobs potentially in the past. So, it's definitely a step up in what he's going to face in terms of scrutiny and attention here in Seattle.
Yeah, from all accounts, though, I was thinking about that, and it seemed kind of strange to me that that was the conversation about Chris Peterson, because from all I can tell, he was beloved in Boise. I don't think that there are any reservations about Chris Peterson at any point from basically anybody who's a booster or a fan of that program. I mean, it's kind of an easy thing to say about somebody, but I think that Chris Peterson will handle it really well. I think he's got really good energy, and I think he feels like a UW guy. And that was ultimately probably why he accepted this job versus a place like USC. I don't know if it's necessarily that he can't handle all of the other things. He's just the natural fit for the program. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a better fit for him being in the Northwest and not being quite as scrutinized a program. But this was not necessarily coming from Boise State people. This was coming from him himself, is saying,
Yeah.
I hate doing this. I just want to go coach
I
football.
just want to coach football.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, and I think that UW will be a program where he'll be able to do that, probably more so than a lot of the other schools who it was rumored had talked to him. Stanford is one that might have made sense, but maybe he was just a little bit outside of his comfort zone because it's kind of a similar program in that way. But at Oregon, you're having to deal with the Nike factor so much when you're there. And then USC is going to be so heavily scrutinized just because of their history. And then also UCLA being in LA. Those are kind of the schools that generally have been considered to have gone after Chris Peterson. He's turned them all down. At the same time, those are kind of all the other power schools in the Pac-12. So it's really exciting that UW is the place that he basically specifically chose to go to and said, I want to be here.
Definitely, and that's what makes it feel like this is going to be a destination job for him, that he'll be here as long as he wants to coach. One of the interesting things he said in this interview was he wasn't sure he saw himself still coaching in 10 years.
That was an interesting thing. I mean, I don't know if I would put too much credence into that. I think that once 10 years from now comes, especially if there's some success along the way or significant success along the way, I'm pretty sure he'll still be interested in coaching then.
Yeah, I agree.
But
Teddy
do you want
was
to talk
helping
about
checked out.
his success at Boise State over the last 6 years?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think that people know that they've been a good program, but there's a question of how much of that is a product of being in the WAC and now the Mountain West and not facing a Pac-12 type schedule, week in and week out. So that's one place where I think statistics can be very helpful in terms of putting him on a level playing field. And it's pretty impressive. I went and looked at Simple Rating System from sportsreference.com's college football site. And so this year was the worst team he coached at Boise State, which ranked 50th in the nation, but he had two teams that ended up ranking in the top t or three teams that ended up ranking in the top 10, including peaking in 2010 at fourth in the nation, seventh in 2011, 10th 2006, the year they won, beat Oklahoma, 13th in 2008, and all of those teams would have finished in the top three in the Pac-12. Oddly, he would never would have been Boise State never would have been the best team in the Pac-12, but very consistently among the elite teams.
Do you think that the level of talent that they've had, does that affect that? Does that question make sense? So he's had access to not he hasn't had access to the top recruits, right? Is that affecting those ratings? Like if he had access to the top recruits, would there have been a possibility for Boise State to have ranked even higher?
I think that's one of the big questions we're going to find out from this hiring, where we just don't know how is that going to translate when he's, recruiting against the USC's and the Oregons of the world for these elite players. Does he still get the diamonds in the rough that they developed at Boise State? Or is it just better talent in the same system? Suddenly it even works better. I mean, I think we don't know.
And so statistically, going over all those seasons, the only season in that time period that UW ranked higher was this season.
Yep, that's the first time. It was pretty close last year, but the narrow edge probably from the fact that they ended up winning the
They
state.
beat UW in a bowl
And it
game.
was
They
a
had a
tough.
narrow edge over UW in a bowl game.
Yeah, they were fairly evenly matched last year. But yeah, I mean, it's a pretty impressive track record of success at the level that they were recruiting and playing against it.
And I think seeing those stats and having you talk talk about those stats excites me more than even I was beforehand, seeing that Boise State wasn't just beating up on easy opponents. I mean, I didn't think that they were because they had two victories over Oregon, victory over Virginia Tech, Oklahoma, TCU with Andy Dalton. I mean, they have some very key wins in that time period, but also seeing that statistically, they were one of the elite programs in the country.
And I think that Oregon thing is really big because if there's one thing to like about this hire, it's that Oregon fans are scared of Chris Peterson.
Yes.
He's won two more games against Oregon in the last decade than UW has in eight less tries.
That's pretty exciting. If he comes in and beats Oregon in his first season, Chris Peterson will be a god. The words "New Don James" will be said a lot.
I think that's one of my fears about this, though, is I hope that people's expectations are realistic that, even though the program has a great deal of talent, even though Chris Peterson is a proven coach, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to come in and immediately jump, be able to jump ahead of Stanford and Oregon in the Pac-12 North. It's an extremely difficult conference right now, and I hope that people are realistic that, if he doesn't make the Rose Bowl in the next couple of years, that doesn't mean he's a disappointment.
It's true. But I do think, and we talked about this yesterday briefly, UW is set up in, and we have to give Coach Sark credit for this in a lot of ways. And I think after the hire, maybe some of the bad feelings that were had for Coach Sark might have be diminished because it feels like we got the right coach for UW, a coach who in a lot of ways has been perceived as a better coach than Coach Sark over an extended period of time. But also, UW is set up in such an interesting way right now where they've got a young roster, but also depending on who stays, a lot of experienced stars on the team right now. I mean, especially if somebody like Austin Seferian-Jenkins sticks around for one more year, and on the small chance that Bishop Sankey sticks around for one more year. But the UW schedule is set up such that next year they're looking at, I'm going to knock on wood when I say this, but probably going into conference play undefeated, and they have a very favorable schedule, and 8-4 seems like a realistic worst-case scenario for next season. So Chris Peterson's set up such that he's going to be able to come in and be in a really favorable situation. He's not having to play at LSU in his first game or something like that.
Yeah, that's definitely a nice thing for him, and it's a soft landing. I think the schedule will ramp up probably over the next couple of years, but definitely next year is kind of a low point.
Well, it's all about kind of telling the story in college football too. What is actually going on doesn't necessarily matter as much as being able to have a good story to tell. And so if Chris Peterson is able to come in and win 8, 9, 10 games next year, even if it's because they had a favorable schedule, he's able to tell that to recruits. He's able to say, look, we're doing this thing. We're the next program after these schools. And you kind of look at it right now, Oregon feels a little bit like they're on their way down. Oregon is not going to be at the same level that they were at. Both of them have lost kind of their key head coach within the last couple of years. UW obviously losing a coach now, but it's not the same as losing somebody like Jim Harbaugh or Chip Kelly.
Yeah, it's not a guy who built the program to that height.
And then do you want to talk really quick about Justin Wilcox?
I think that's the major remaining intrigue. Yeah, what happens with Wilcox? So obviously he's worked with Chris Peterson, and Boise State had some of its greatest success with Wilcox as their defensive coordinator. So there's a history there. But on the other hand, now all of a sudden Wilcox could be a candidate for that Boise State job.
And I think he'll be a very good candidate for Boise State. So there's an interesting thing at play with all these coaches moving around. I think that Chris Peterson being hired at UW, and this is just a hunch, I haven't read this anywhere, I think it doesn't eliminate USC from the conversation, but I think it pushes USC down to the third choice. With Chris Peterson being Justin Wilcox's mentor, first person who had him as a defensive coordinator under him, they obviously are comfortable with each other. All reports have been that they're very good friends. So it feels really natural that he would stick where he's at. And I think there would be a potential salary increase that went along with that. It makes more sense to stay there rather than have USC have to pay a big buyout and have him travel to a new place where he's not as experienced and doesn't understand the climate as well. So I think right now for Wilcox, it comes down to Boise State head coach or UW defensive coordinator.
I would tend to agree with that. How many other assistant coaches do you think end up staying put at this point? I think Tui is fairly likely, given his history here, and then Tosh Lupoi is probably also the biggest name among the guys who could potentially stay.
I mean, yeah, I would be shocked if Tui left. He's somebody who I think they'll want to keep around the program long term, especially being named the interim head coach for the bowl game. I thought that was a nice touch by Scott Woodward, giving just giving something to Tui and demonstrating that, like, we really care about him at the program. You couldn't do that with somebody like Wilcox because there's so much turmoil and influx with him. For Tosh Lupoi, I think that he goes wherever Justin Wilcox goes.
That makes sense.
At this point, if Justin Wilcox goes to Boise State, I think it would be very likely that Lupoi could potentially be the defensive coordinator there, and he'll have a lot of help having a defensive coach with him. And if he stays at UW, I would, again, see probably raises for both Wilcox and Lupoi to stick around. I mean, Lupoi recruited a lot of the Husky team right now. He's got really good relationships with people like Shaq Thompson, John Ross. I would be shocked if he left them for what I would consider basically no reason. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like overall the results of this week, I mean, you talked about arguably a better coach. Do you feel like this has increased your interest and interest in general in the Husky football program?
100%. Absolutely. Bringing in somebody like Chris Peterson, and again, it's another way that we have to thank Coach Sark. He set up the program to be able to hire Chris Peterson. When the job was open 4 years ago, whenever Sark was hired, Chris Peterson had no interest in the job, right? And now we're at this point where we're right there on the cusp. And I think USC might be in a similar situation also. I would say that the future of the Pac-12 for the next 5 to 10 years is UCLA with Jim Mora, USC with Coach Sark, and UW with Chris Peterson.
Yeah, a lot of commentary about how it's now got the best group of coaches in the nation. And one of the tweets today was that the only coach in the Pac-12 who doesn't have a 9-win season to their credit at some point, and this could have changed with the bowl game, is Sark.
Yeah. And he won until at least next year. But I think things might be a little bit more difficult for Sark at USC for a couple of years. But I do think that USC is – they're getting a lot of energy with Coach Sark. And again, he's kind of the natural fit. So having these people involved, Chris Peterson is kind of where he should be. I think maybe even Jim Mora is where he should be also. And Coach Sark is where he should be. It means that they're going to be leading these programs in really successful and effective ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the future, the Pac-12 already probably the best conference in the country this year. I mean, we'd certainly argue it. And the future even looks better after this past week.
But I mean, my interest in Husky football right now, at some points during the season, my interest was very low. And it picked up, obviously, with the big win against Oregon State and the Apple Cup victory. So my interest in the program was already higher. But then with this, it's probably the most it's been for years at this point, my interest in Husky football. It's like, it is my foremost team. Honestly, with all the news of this week, it's kind of distracted from the Seahawks in a pretty significant way where I'm not thinking about the Seahawks and 49ers this Sunday. And in the past, I would always be thinking about the upcoming Seahawks game, no matter who they were playing. And now we're playing our most hated rival on the road in a huge game for the Seahawks. And it's kind of like, you know, UW football has dominated my thoughts and also dominated the sports world.
Yeah, absolutely. And Seattle in general, just making sports headlines all over. I think now we have 2 days to focus on the Seahawks game. And there was an interesting connection that I came across while I was doing that research. I mentioned that Chris Peterson's best Boise State team was actually one that did not make the BCS. It was his 2010 team that finished fourth in the nation. And you know why they didn't make the BCS? Do you remember?
There was a missed field goal against Nevada?
Yeah, who was quarterbacked by?
Oh, Colin Kaepernick. Interesting. Interesting. There are a lot of players that you see pop up from those Boise State teams in the NFL. And I think that Chris Peterson, I mean, obviously Colin Kaepernick was not coached by Chris Peterson, but on that Boise State team, there were NFL players. And I think that Chris Peterson is going to be able to take that NFL connection and really be able to sell it to recruits in a way that he probably couldn't do at Boise State, because you're trying to convince people to go live in Boise for 4 years versus coming and living in Seattle, which right now is pretty beautiful. It's sunny outside, sunny and cold in the winter. And these amazing facilities and kind of the amazing investment in football that we have. And I think that Chris Peterson's going to be able to take all of these NFL successes and add to them with the current Huskies who are going to be in the NFL in a couple of years. I mean, really, Shaq Thompson probably will end up being a Chris Peterson success when it's all said and done, and really be able to sell people on this program and their NFL prospects.
Well, that's the hope.
Anything else on Chris Peterson? Are you excited?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, it went the best way it possibly could.
I mean, we've got the bowl game coming up. I would assume that Chris Peterson will be there, probably on the sidelines, not hands-on as much. He's going to dive into recruiting right away. So that's kind of the next step. And then you've got extreme football interest through recruiting day in early February, and then kind of dormant for a period of time.
Well, lull until spring ball will be very interesting to watch this year. And I think one of the nice things about this is that, you know, there are some similarities between Chris Peterson's scheme and what the Huskies were running this year. I think other than the fact that they generally don't play at that same kind of up tempo.
And you could see him adjusting, or maybe next year being a mixture of both. But he's got a long time to figure it out. This is not a late hire. He's got enough time to put together a good class. And I'm really excited for what Chris Peterson can do in the coming 2 months and then the rest of his life.
Coach for life, Chris Peterson. All right, well, I guess that's all we have for this special Peltoncast edition. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.